Not many things fit into a name.
No
speaks
comment.
From, speaks from experience.
It's Wednesday night. All the stars are out in Wolverhampton at Bacon Towers for Log Radio Season 2, Episode 9.
Hooray!
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been waiting for him. Here's Jono!
And Aid.
Hey, what are we getting by?
Welcome to Log Radio.
And Matt.
Log Radio, Log Radio, Log Radio.
Ooh.
Oh yeah, season two,
this show will
now hear me, season two, episode nine.
This show will include swearing. There's no might include swearing. It's gonna, okay?
It'll include it's gonna do it. Swearing.
It's that 21st episode.
Oh, already.
21st episode, we're coming of age. Also, next episode
coming in
is our
age.
Year anniversary.
In age. We're all coming in age.
Ooh.
And it may contain adult themes.
Okay, so we've spoken to a few people over the last couple of weeks.
We have.
And one of the people we thought it'd be really cool to talk to is Miguel Díaz-Caza, the leader of the Mono Project.
Fantastic.
Shall we have a chat with him then?
We shall.
Let's do it.
Hello?
Hi, is that Miguel?
Yeah, this is Miguel.
How's it going, Miguel? This is Lug Radio calling.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Perfect. It's going great.
Brilliant. So what's going on with Mono?
Well, lots of things. Are we already recording?
Oh, we're recording.
We're always recording.
You're speaking to the Lug Radio faithful at the moment.
Woo! All right. So what is going on with Mono? So, well, last year we released 1.0, and we've been very busy working on our upcoming version. So,
right.
The major feature for this new release is going to be the support for Windows Forms. I mean, that's a major, big, user noticeable change from an API perspective. From other points of view, it's all about stability, scalability, consuming less memory, being faster, better, so on. I mean, your standard open source distributed tuning of your software. So it's going really well. We're having a lot of fun.
So how far away, I mean, in terms of the Mono platform and implementing what you'd consider a platform that's stable and secure enough to port applications from Windows, how far away do you think that is, obviously with all the system.windows.form stuff?
Well, there's a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of people who are already doing it today, in particular with ASP.NET applications. Porting applications is not a straightforward thing, sadly. I mean, you can't really, I mean, most of the time you can copy the binary, but there are a few cases where you actually have to pay close attention. In particular, Windows uses one kind of path separators, right? And Unix is a different one. Windows programmers tend to mix uppercase and lowercase file names.
Right.
So if you're careful, then your application won't have any problems. But in particular, ASP.NET applications tend to hard code a lot of files and references, and they just mix casings all the time. So you either put your stuff in a file system that will take care of that for you, or you have to be a little bit more careful when you're developing your application to make sure that it works across multiple OSs.
Okay, cool.
So I would say from the API perspective and from the language perspective and the NPM perspective, we're fine. People might run into things that are very operating system specific.
I wonder if you could clarify something for me, and that is, what have Microsoft said from a licensing point of view? Could you clarify that one for me?
I mean, Microsoft licenses the .NET framework.
Okay.
To people who want to buy the software, right? So just like they license the Windows source code and they license other pieces, but the license is not an open source license, so we cannot use the Microsoft licensing.
Okay.
We have to create our own implementation. Just like they license the SIFS protocols and all that stuff, but it comes with strings attached. So we do not license any Microsoft technologies. We actually have to re-implement everything ourselves.
But are they quite happy for you to develop Mono, is kind of what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know if they're happy.
Right.
Right, it's open source. It goes against the way of exactly, making business. Yeah. We improved the macOS. We improved Linux. Right, we improved Solaris. So I don't know if they're too happy. I mean, in one hand, they are happy that there is a .NET implementation which is not from them that runs on other platforms. It takes some of the pressure off that they have from customers that need to target more than one operating system.
Yeah, sure.
It is a way, I guess, to move people to C# as opposed to moving to Java, things like that. So I mean, like everything else in this industry, you might like a technology for some reason, and you might dislike it for others, and I would say that's a problem of the whole industry.
How much contact has there been with Microsoft? I mean, obviously you've got the specs to refer to, and there were certainly, in the early days at least, talking about a lot of talk about how there were hackers from Microsoft and hackers from Zimian and whatnot getting together and talking about this stuff. But has there been a lot of formal contact? Has there been a lot of informal contact, or are you quite separate?
I would say it's mostly informal. And it's a way that I actually deal with most people. There are very few high-level contacts with anybody in the industry, I would say. I mean, sometimes you would do that, you would have a partnership, you would have some agreements, but those are rare. I mean, in practice, those kinds of agreements are rare. And collaboration at those levels, I mean, might be probably the best thing to do in some environments, but I don't think that's what you see most of the time, right? So when I talk to the Microsoft people, I talk to them either through the ECMA committee, because they have a bunch of people in the ECMA groups for C#, C++, and the CLI, and also because I've met them either at conferences or during the ECMA meetings or things like that, or they come to visit or I go visit. So at a personal level, I'm very good friends with many people at Microsoft, and that helps. But even if there was no help, Microsoft.NET is a fairly well-documented piece of software, and the ECMA spec is fairly well-documented. So you don't really need it, but it's nice to be friends with the engineers and the people who are behind the technology, so they can explain it to you, they can spell it out for you, right? And they've been great when it comes to answering any questions.
One question I've got, Miguel, is obviously a lot of people have expressed certain concerns regarding the fact that .NET is predominantly a Microsoft-driven technology. Some people have expressed some concerns in terms of potential legal problems. And obviously, a lot of this has been documented that many of these technologies are under ECMA, so there isn't really an issue. And a lot of it's been modularized. I understand that the GTK stuff, for example, is quite separated. One question I've got, obviously, Novell are your employer, and they're paying for a lot of this to happen. Do you think Novell are going to offer some kind of indemnity if people were to get into legal issues?
No, I don't think anybody in the industry offers indemnity over these things, because a big part of the problem with the patent system, with software patents, is that anybody can patent something, and even if the patent is bogus, and even if the patent is trying to patent some previously well-known technologies, right, or prior, where there's proof of prior art, even fighting those things would take a tremendous amount of money. So in general, in general, what you have to do is you have to play by the patent rules, which is to say that, first of all, if somebody points you out that you're infringing a patent, then you have to take action, which means, and I can describe the steps for you. The first step is looking and finding whether the patent is valid and whether you can find prior art, if this is a new invention or it was not. If it was not a new invention, then you can say, well, there's prior art. If this is a new invention, you can try to implement the same features using a different approach or a different technology.
Right.
And that has been done in many cases. And finally, there's cases where you cannot implement the same feature using a different approach. And in that case, you would have to remove that feature. So we're ready to do that if we are asked to, because that's the legal framework we're living on right now. It's not ideal, but we have to abide by those rules.
Okay.
So one thing that a lot of, some Linux users and open source advocates are concerned about is that the future of GNOME seems to be entwined with Mono. And as GNOME is perhaps our greatest chance on the desktop at the moment, it doesn't seem to be leaving much of an option for people who might philosophically or for whatever reason not want to run Mono.
Well, I don't think that GNOME is forcing anyone to use Mono. Not at this point. It's not even part of the standard platform, right? The GNOME people haven't even chosen which new language or platform they're going to be using for developing software, which I think is a shame, because I think that Mono is the most advanced technology for building these things. Mm-hmm. But I understand that there's people who don't want to, and I think that the GNOME Foundation has decided not to standardize on anything at this point. So it's kind of a gray area, because the reality is that most of the new applications being developed for GNOME nowadays are being developed with Mono and GTK Sharp, because it's simpler, it's more robust, it's cuter, right? And for example, GNOME files now, I was just told by Eugenia Lolli yesterday or 2 days ago that
I read
7
this.
Out of the 20 best rated applications in GNOME files are Mono applications.
Okay, bear with me here, Miguel, before you go a lot further on that. Looking at those top 20 apps, yeah? I'll be honest with you, I looked at the top 20, I could only find 6 that were in that were written with Mono, which are Beagle, F-Spot, Mono Develop, Imendio, Blam, Tomboy, and Muine, or Muine, however you pronounce it.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at those, Mono Develop is not a tool which makes it better to use Mono in GNOME particularly. I mean, we're not developing things in Mono, we're developing something to help people write Mono applications.
Well, it is a desktop application, right?
But if we'd never gone for if you'd never started Mono at all, we wouldn't need Mono Develop.
If you didn't start, yeah. So what is the problem?
Looking at those applications,
if you want, we can go through the list of the 20 top applications, and we can criticize whether it really makes sense to have that.
Do I really need
Inkscape if I'm not a designer?
Don't get me wrong.
XFCE is not even a GNOME application. Why is it listed?
Which I thought was weird, I must admit. But if you look at, say, Beagle and F-Spot,
I'm just saying, if you're going to go down that path, then let's go down that path, and then we can start to take things out. Like I said, Inkscape, if you're a designer, maybe. Mozilla Firefox, not really a GNOME application.
Yeah,
what is it doing there? XFCE, it's a competing desktop to GNOME.
Yep.
Why is it there? Well, it happens to be the best rated GTK application. That's all I'm saying.
I see your point. But looking at applications that are developed in Mono in general, there aren't that many which are actually ready for prime time at this stage. I mean, you've got Tomboy, which is excellent. Tomboy is an absolutely superb application. But mm-hmm. F-Spot says quite clearly on the website, this is not ready for prime time at this point. And Beagle,
and
again,
it's not listed as one of the best rated. Oh, it is listed as the best rated.
Sorry, say that again?
No, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, Beagle, again, is very cool. I mean, Beagle is different to the others because it's less an application and more something which looks like it could be a core part of GNOME. So, I mean, if we're looking at developing things like that on the Mono platform, is it then, the question that Matt brought up earlier about the idea that some people are philosophically opposed to Mono, if it is entwined into GNOME to that extent, is that worrying?
No, it doesn't worry to me. If you're worried,
I'm not overly surprised at that, I must admit.
Well, listen, I've adopted the position that I'm not gonna try to convince people about what technology. If they don't want to use Mono, then don't use Mono. I'm not gonna push it in the GNOME Foundation. The reality today is that people are developing these applications, and the reality today is that we're simpler to develop, just like we predicted. You can reuse a lot of Windows components if you choose to, right? You can reuse a lot of extra open source. People have a lot more information readily available today to write Mono and GTK Sharp applications than they have for other technologies on the Linux desktop. It's exclusively because they can go to a bookstore and get all kinds of material on the language, all kinds of help online. I mean, the volume is a lot larger for .NET than it is for GTK and Python.
Right.
If you don't want to use it, don't use it. I mean, by all means, stick to whatever you want.
It's all about choice, isn't it?
But I'm not in the business of convincing you. I'm here to provide better tools for those who want it. If you want to inflict some pain in yourself, that's up to you. I'm nobody to judge people's special desires.
I think it's all about choice, and I think it's better that we have more choice rather than less choice. So I think it's a good thing.
So I really don't want to argue about whether... well, about whether you should use Mono or not. If you don't want to, don't use it. I mean, I'm not going to be upset.
Well, I mean, moving on slightly, I mean, obviously, you've been involved with a number of different things, Miguel, and one of which was Zimian, or... Is it Zimian or is it Zymian? Or how
Zimian,
do you pronounce
Zimian.
It? Zimian. Okay.
It's official.
I mean, how was that? I'd be intrigued to know what it was like when you first set it up, because it seemed like a bit of a risk back in the day. And it's obviously paved pretty well because you guys are involved with Novell, and Novell are doing some great work. So, So I mean, how was it when you set this, when you set Zimian up?
I'm sorry, what is the question?
Well, how was it? I mean, what kind of experiences did you have? Was it a nerve-wracking experience setting Zimian up, or did it go fairly smoothly? I mean, did you face many challenges?
It was a bit of everything. I mean, we got funded, we got our angel funding, we got our first round of finance, our second round of finance, and they were pretty interesting times. We were funded just after the bubble, so
right.
our second round of financing came after the bubble burst, so it was a very tricky round of financing to get. There's been so many stories. There have been ups and downs. I mean, it's been a fantastic experience. I don't regret it at all. I think it's the best thing we could have done for Linux on the desktop.
Right.
Miguel, how do you see the future of Novell and Linux? Do you think that Novell as a company will make a serious contribution to not just Linux commercially, but also Linux the community? For example, one thing that interested me was at the moment that Zimian became part of Novell, the Exchange Evolution Exchange connector was open sourced. Does that represent Novell's philosophy in general?
Well, there are more things. I mean, the situation is that I think that the Linux phenomenon and open source in general is something that is not only it's not something that only the open source developer were looking at and paying attention to or were interested in. There were a lot of people at Novell that were thinking along those lines, and they were looking at the open source progress and what was happening there, and they were interesting to get their feet wet on this stuff. So there was a lot of our existing knowledge about open source by the time of the acquisition, and you can see that Novell is continuing to do things like that. We've open sourced a lot of things. When Novell acquired SUSE, they also open sourced Yas, which finally made SUSE a completely open source distributions and things like that, right? But there's more than that. I mean, in one hand, we keep developing. I mean, it's not only about open sourcing existing technologies, but it's also about developing the key elements that are necessary for Linux to become successful, right? So Novell keeps paying for the evolution development, right, because we consider it strategic. The development of FSpot is also a Novell project. Beagle is a Novell project. Novell is open sourcing this technology called iFolder, right, which is a system for synchronizing data across machines and sharing data with friends
and
family
cool,
and whoever, right? It's a peer-to-peer sharing technology, and that's also becoming open source. So there's a lot of things like that. The Mono project went from having 6 full-time developers to have 25 full-time developers. And all of this is funded by Novell. So there is a clear commitment of Novell to the open source community. And there's other people in other groups. I just don't remember them all. But there are kernel hackers and there are X hackers and there's all the SUSE hackers, right, that contribute to open source. But one of the reasons we were so excited about the acquisition back in the day, Nat and myself, is that there were some problems in Linux adoption. I mean, we had been trying to sell Evolution and the Zimian desktop to organizations, and we would hear what the complaints would be. Things like, we need support. I mean, it might be very nice and very open source, but we need support. We need somebody we can call at any time. We need people who can bring who can come here and fix the issues. We need training and so on. And Novell does have this this channel, this distribution channel. They have this international sales organization and marketing and
right.
all these elements that were missing in a small startup like Zimian. I mean, to us, it would take literally months to make a large sale. It would take months of traveling and going and visiting the customer and so on. And you have so many people. So selling, it's really hard. I mean, there is a large market for open source technologies and services and so on. But it's something that, as a startup, is a lot harder to achieve right, when you're in the market. And on the other hand, Novell has all of those pieces already in place from its previous business. So it's a way of accelerating Linux deployments and open source deployments. So I think there's two elements. Novell continues to be committed to and funding and developing open source technologies, right? And it continues to be an important player there. And at the same time, we take advantage of the older infrastructure that was in there.
Cool. So are you expecting some larger deployments this year?
Of Novell Desktop?
Well, I assume Novell Desktop.
Oh, tons. Novell Desktop and the server. I'm not the right person to get the list of people.
No, obviously not.
The right person is Nat, but yeah, I mean, we hang out in the same office, and you hear about all these deployments all the time, or people buying, or they're fixing some bug for some customer, or some customer needs this or that, mm-hmm. so they're working all the time on making sure that Linux has the things that people need.
It would be it'd be great to get Nat on the show at some point in the future, but I'm afraid we've pretty much run out of time, Miguel, so we'd all like to thank you for taking the time to speak
to
us.
Thanks very much.
Well, thank you.
And,
speaking to you.
And I know that all the Lug Radio listeners will have been looking forward to sort of listening to you, so thanks very much, and all the best in the future with Novell and everything else.
Thank you so much. Have fun, guys.
Take care.
Bye. So then, what do we think of that then?
Yeah, was interesting.
That was good, yeah. I get the impression he gets asked that question quite a lot.
Which
a
question?
Defensive.
Which question?
I think he does get
the mono thing.
You're going to fuck up Linux. It's all your fault. You're going to fuck it up completely, right? Yeah,
that's right. I don't see any problem with mono, to be honest.
I got a problem with it.
Yeah, tell us about choice, it. Isn't it?
What is your
it's
problem?
It's good
Mac?
To have that problem.
Yeah, but you say it's all about choice, but you don't like Apple Macs, for example.
Absolutely,
so
I make that choice. Yeah.
Let's see why.
Shall we talk about that later?
Maybe. Let's see why ACK doesn't like Mono.
The reason, well, there are two reasons why I don't like Mono.
No, there's always two. Why is there always two?
I don't know why there's always two. There just is.
It's a virtual memory problem, right? I think there are more than two problems, but you just can't remember. So you page them off to the hard disk, and then you never remember to page it back.
Oh, sorry, I fell asleep there. What was that?
So, ACK, why don't you
your
like Mono?
Reasons why I don't like Mono. The first reason is something which is, I concede, slightly unfair, but it's the way I feel about it anyway, which is that we've taken a load of really talented guys who could have been doing loads of other work for GNOME, and instead got them building yet another bloody framework.
Yeah.
But it's not something which actually does work that users need. It's something that lets you build things
I
that
think
does,
it's unfair
work
to say it's them. Just another framework. It's quite an important framework.
Why?
Well, Microsoft seems to think it's quite important.
Oh, so we do as well. That's the reason. Oh, I'm convinced.
They think Longhorn's important. I mean,
I think. Yeah, you know, I mean, Microsoft think lots of things are important. And don't get me wrong, I think some of the things that they think are important, we do as well. But we already have.
Have you looked at the technologies? Obviously, you've looked at the technologies behind it. But, I mean, it's some cool stuff in there.
Don't get me wrong. I think technically it's quite a sweet thing.
Yeah.
But I think that we've spent, I mean, we've got 25 guys, he said there.
Mm-hmm.
Novell are paying 25 guys to work on implementing the .NET framework. Uh-huh. How much of FSpot and Beagle and things like that would they have done by now if they weren't all busy implementing the .NET runtimes?
Using previous technologies,
and we're instead building Beagle using previous technologies. I mean, if you think they should be writing it in C, then okay, maybe the development time wouldn't be as fast, but maybe they should be writing, I mean, I'm going to say Python.
Yeah, I saw
but
that one coming.
Java GNOME or the Ruby GNOME bindings. I mean, all these things exist, and while you might believe that .NET is a better environment than Python, I don't think it's that much better that they wouldn't have been further ahead than they are now with projects built on .NET if you'd have taken all the guys who are actually building .NET itself and made them write FSpot. It wouldn't be at 0.0.7 and have on the website, don't use this, it's not stable.
I think there's a few issues.
That's only my first reason why.
Let's get the second
and
one.
And don't
then.
Forget there are two.
Go on then.
You might as well give us a second.
Go on, give us your second reason.
The second reason...
He's thought about this a lot, hasn't he?
I have thought about Mono a great deal.
Has it kept you awake at night?
It's the most worrying thing I see.
Seriously?
Oh, for God's sake.
It really is.
You're a dramatist, aren't you?
I can kind of see where
software fans are worse than Mono.
And they're
worse.
Tied up in Mono.
The thing is, it's the latest technology.
The second reason why I don't like Mono is essentially all around that kind of thing.
So you don't like a lot of other software?
I'm worried there are going to be submarine patents there. And I'm worried that Microsoft will have set it up so that there are submarine patents. And then we'll have not only loads of guys who've essentially wasted their time building the .NET framework if it suddenly turns out a year down the road that we can't use it.
That would be tragic.
But also, we'll have some of GNOME depending on it, and if that suddenly goes away, GNOME suddenly takes a kick in the bollocks and becomes a less good platform.
I really can't see that happening, though. Imagine the bad press they'd get for that, though.
It's the best thing. What the fuck do Microsoft care about bad press from the Linux community?
No, but in general.
But is that your second point?
Why would they get bad press for leveraging their monopoly? You don't think they get enough bad press for that?
It hasn't fucking helped.
They've posted record earnings this quarter.
Yeah. I don't think Microsoft particularly care about that bad press. But I think let's focus this on a slightly different issue. Right, Mono is, it's not just one thing. I think it's fair to be critical of Mono by saying, in terms of writing pure Linux software, because Python has already existed and the necessary tools have already existed, and there's already been KDE technology that's existed in which you could do this. I think Miguel had a good point in the fact that he's, Eric Dask, who I did an interview with for Linux User about this, said that one of the issues was people don't necessarily have enterprise confidence with Python, whereas people have enterprise confidence with .NET because it's got a big player behind it. Now, that's one issue, and it's a reasonable issue to have, right? The other thing is, of course, one of the prime reasons behind Mono is so you can port software from Windows to Linux or create multi-platform software. Now, with that, I think it's fairly reasonable. The thing I have a certain concern about is the same thing that you have, in the sense of so much more could have been created if instead of re-implementing another framework, they just extended and improved Python, which is a capable language. It can do. There's not a massive amount of difference between the Mono framework and the Python framework with Glade and all the rest of it. There are limitations, but they could have fixed up those limitations.
In COBOL as well, couldn't we?
Well, it doesn't.
The thing is, though, is that with open source, there's always been an ethos of don't reinvent the wheel. Why should it be different with Mono?
Yeah, sure, let's just keep using COBOL.
No, the point
but
is...
But that's not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, do it.
No, there's nothing wrong with improving...
Why should we use new technologies?
They haven't invented a new language.
No, they haven't invented a new language. No,
they've invented new virtual machine technology, at which point the Java guys are going to say, we had that 10 years ago. Why are you not writing it in Java?
There's nothing massively new about Mono, or about the .NET framework. It's just an implementation that's driven by... somebody who's particularly capable at ensuring confidence.
Don't get me wrong. I can see that there's enterprise confidence in .NET that there isn't in other things. But we ought to be fucking working to fix that. Not just going, well, we'll just let Microsoft define the direction of the IT industry and then we'll carry on implementing it because the only people who people have got confidence in is Microsoft.
I just don't want us to get left behind using ancient technologies and stuff like that.
The point is that I do not believe that .NET is this shining star which is light years ahead of everything else. I really, really, really do not believe that.
I don't think it's necessarily been left behind, but I think the thing is, I have to admit, I don't know everything about Mono. I'm not a Mono developer. I don't keep up with Mono. But my impression is that Mono is another alternative. And I think Miguel was good in the sense that he said, you know, he's not here to persuade us about this. It's another alternative. And if we don't want it, then fair enough.
To be fair, he's got no reason to persuade us, because I think the sort of people who want to persuade are massive corporations who are going to take Novell Linux Desktop and Novell Linux Server and deploy basic custom applications that they otherwise would have done on .NET.
But then again...
But then again,
a lot of the people who are going to interact with projects such as Beagle aren't involved in that culture. They're people like you and me who are just developers. And those people might not necessarily want to be involved in that. So it's kind of like it crosses over again.
But aren't Beagle and things like that maybe just proofs of concept just to show that Mono does work? And maybe Mono is just going to become this... maybe a corporate niche type thing, because I don't really... I mean, I do hear .NET developers like Regulus and Schwuck sing the praises of Mono. He says it's great because it works very well, it implements some things better than not .NET does, the actual Microsoft implementation. Yep. But I don't think there's much love for it within the general open source community, just because it feels as though we're playing catch-up yet again to yet another proprietary technology.
Yep. But I think the issue, though, is that... I mean, the thing is...
Sing it, brother!
It's hallelujah! The thing is, it's another alternative.
What's going to look better on your CV, though? I'm a Python developer, or I'm a Mono developer? What's going to make you more employable?
And do you know what? they've been agitating at work that we should be using .NET
there you go.
For the last couple of years, and I have flat out refused to do so. And it would look better on my CV.
And you'd be able to get a job easier.
But the reason they're saying that, yeah, and I'd be able to get a job easier, you're quite right.
Yeah.
But importantly, they want to use .NET for the same reason you do, right? You've never, how much development have you done with .NET?
Very little.
How much development have you done with competing technologies to .NET?
None.
But you think .NET's loads better than the competing technologies, and you don't know anything about it.
Because I've got friends who are developers, and they're just putting all of their energy into
.NET. Am I not your friend? Or am I not a developer? You know, I mean, that's the point. People,
and my lover.
People at work are saying, we should be using .NET... just because of what Jono said. It's got Microsoft written on it, so it must be good.
It's not just that, though,
is it? It so is.
I think in the enterprise, a lot of people are going to switch onto .NET because it's got Microsoft's blessing. And Nivelle know that. Nivelle are fully aware that it's got Microsoft's blessing. There's a lot of documentation out there. There's a lot of people who are going to train in Microsoft technologies. Irrespective of what idealism states, people are going to train in Microsoft technology. So therefore, people are going to use it. But I think the thing is, it's great. I mean, Mono is great in the sense that it's another alternative. It's another option. It's another vent for people to create Linux software. And with that in mind, Miguel and his team are doing a great job. But the concern is whether people are encouraged to choose one platform over another. And I don't think it's fair to accuse the Mono guys of doing that. They've just provided a platform. Whether people use it or not is up to them.
Yeah,
you say that, but again, I've got my worry. I mean, the plan, as I understand it, is for Evolution, for example, to become a Mono project.
Yeah.
Now, Evolution is the primary, you know, email and contact system on Linux, really.
For the corporate desktop.
I wouldn't agree with that.
You can't deny it's major, okay?
Default in GNOME, give you that.
Right. And it's a major part of GNOME, and things in GNOME are starting to rely on it more. No, up stuff because I don't use Evolution, I miss out on some of the integration within GNOME.
Right.
As soon as Evolution starts, you know, if Evolution starts going Evolution Sharp, for example, then loads of the other stuff that works in GNOME, either you refuse to use Mono and don't get it, so you're not getting as good a platform, or GNOME depends on Mono.
So I kind of see your point, yeah.
What was that, Matt?
So where's the choice? You know, it's almost like coercing you to use it through, you'll have to lose this if you don't. But it's up to you, you don't have to. The identity cards aren't going to be compulsory in this country.
Exactly.
You won't be able to get a bloody passport if you don't take one.
Yeah, but they're not bloody compulsory. Labor. What you just do, you know, if you don't...
The anger is back, ladies and gentlemen.
If you don't want
an
identity card, that's fine. You know, you have to give up going abroad and you have to give up driving.
Yeah.
But you can do it if you want to avoid it. And saying... the choice is perfectly open. It's entirely up to you. Just your life will be crap if you don't have it is a coerced choice.
It's not about being wrong. I'm asking a question. There's no such thing as a wrong question, you motherfuckers.
It's all about...
anger! The anger
strikes! The anger strikes!
Come on. Bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum. I'm so pleased I recorded that.
The intro.
Right, I was ill last week, okay? Yep. I had the flu, quite bad actually.
Not as bad as Jono's bronchial disorder.
Yeah,
well, it might have been worse, in fact.
Well, who knows?
You had a pneumonia, didn't you? when you were younger.
When I was 14, I had pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
Anyway, come on.
Does that mean your poo moans?
We're trying to keep this segment short.
I was moaning about poo.
Shut up.
Sorry, carry on, Matt.
I wanted to do something quite simple, as I saw it, which was VPN to my office. PPTP, whatever it's called.
PPTP.
The proprietary Microsoft VPN tunneling thing. I want to do that. I know it's available for Linux. Sponsored by HP.
It's about 1,000 years old, but it's available.
Yeah. And it works from what I've read.
Apparently,
you can get it working.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it working in Ubuntu. Mm. Now, the thing that...
the world ends there, doesn't it?
The thing that confused me was that I had to recompile the kernel with some kind of encryption module. Now, I can understand why I need encryption, because the VPN tunnel is encrypted. But why is it, it set me thinking, why is it that very often, if you want to do certain things in Linux, why do you have to recompile the kernel to do those things?
Shall I respond here?
Go for it. Now,
first of all,
I'll exhaust my tiny bit of knowledge on this, okay. In that, is it the kernel you had to compile?
Well, in the end, I couldn't be bothered,
right.
So I didn't.
Because aren't these things modular? Right. Don't you have modules?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Okay. Is your question, why do kernels need compiling? Or not quite that basic. But the point is, you understand that when a distribution kernel is delivered, they haven't turned all the options on. Because if you turn all the options on, it'll make it bigger.
I think Matt means, why does he often have to resort to compiling a kernel?
What I mean is that to do things in Linux, sometimes you have to recompile a kernel. My understanding is, I've never had to do it myself.
Yes.
Because whenever I've come up to that brick wall, I've thought, sod it, I'm not going to bother. On other operating systems, clearly because they're not open source, you don't even have the source to compile a kernel, you don't seem to have to do that hard work. Am I just missing the point here?
Okay, there were two reasons.
Always with the two.
Always
with the two.
Sorry. The first thing is that, yes, admittedly, when they deliver a distribution kernel, they don't deliver it with all the options turned on, because you don't need some of the options, and every option you turn on makes the kernel bigger.
Would that make it slower as well, or is that why they do it?
And it'd probably make it a bit slower. I don't think it'd make it massively slower.
Certainly, I've got a guilty confession.
I've turned on many, many, many options in compiled kernels in the past.
Aid's guilty confession is I've never, ever compiled a kernel in my life.
I haven't compiled a kernel for about 2 years, and you need to very, very rarely these days.
Right.
But the reason that you have to sometimes on Linux and you don't on other operating systems is because with other operating systems you can create a kernel module which will plug into that kernel because you've only got one kernel. There's not a 2.6.8 and a 2.6.9 and a 2.6.10 and a 2.6.11. There's only the NT, you know, the Windows 2000 kernel.
Okay.
So it never changes. If Ubuntu, for instance, could deliver one single Ubuntu kernel, which never changes, and then deliver kernel modules compiled against that kernel, and that'd be it, and then you'd be fine. The problem with doing that is if you've got more than one, for instance, when you rev the kernel because there's a kernel bug, if you install a new kernel, then you need all new modules, because you can't plug modules into a kernel they weren't compiled.
This is why
which Jono has spoken about before now.
Yeah. This is why I didn't go for the compilation of the kernel, because I thought, I want to, next time I do a synaptic update, or an apt-get disk upgrade or whatever, I want to get
the latest... Or a EM update.
Yes.
I want to get the latest kernel. I don't want to have to recompile it again, just for some minor progress.
If you've got to do something which requires compilation of your kernel, you are then stuck with compiling a kernel until the end of time, unless you can convince the Ubuntu people that they want to turn on the option that you turned on.
So you actually are talking about compiling a kernel, aren't you?
I am, it seems. Okay. Briefly, then...
Yeah.
Can we get out of this situation? Is there any way that we can have a situation where...
Yes, there is.
We can use MacOS.
What's it called, Mono?
No. What we do is we convince the kernel developers to deliver a stable binary interface to the kernel.
Which isn't going
to
happen.
So you can compile a module against 2.6.6, and then it will plug into 2.6.10. At that point...
Which seems reasonable to me.
Yep, and Linus flatly refuses to do it.
Why?
We've talked about this on the show more than once, but it might have gone over your head a bit.
Let's...
John,
maybe we should get Linus on the phone.
There's various reasons why we're not doing
Linus Torvalds.
And I pronounce Linux as Linux.
Everyone has heard that. As a .au, yes.
I think there's various reasons why they're not providing binary compatibility.
Thanks for that insight.
API. There are various reasons. Linus, as Axe says, flat out refuses to do it. And people have said that providing a stable API will either slow down kernel development or it'll encourage the development of closed source drivers. The other thing
which it will, which is fine
To some extent.
The thing is,
in certain situations,
no, irrespective of what you think of the ethics of closed source drivers,
backtrack, angry man.
Irrespective of what you think of the ethics of closed source drivers, there is something to be said about closed source drivers because they do make the system more unstable, which is why you have so many problems with Windows.
Right.
So it's kind of like there's a no-win situation, and it's not going to happen anyway, so there's no point in talking about it.
But, nicely wound
but
up.
With the,
thanks a lot, Linus.
But with the, I think with the with your problem about sort of compiling kernels, it's becoming less of an issue now. When I got involved with Linux, you had to compile a kernel.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I very rarely compile kernels, unless there's not a driver in the kernel.
I seriously have not needed to... about 2 years ago, I thought... I was using Debian at the time, and I thought, I wonder
well,
whether...
Well, there's a surprise.
I wonder whether I could actually use a Debian stock kernel, because I was basically under the impression I had to compile my own kernel. And I thought, I'll try using Debian stock kernel. It worked. And since that day, I've never needed to compile a kernel.
Yeah.
Here's something, right? I was reading on the internet today, yeah?
It's the interweb, dude.
On the World Wide Web. I was reading about...
The intellect.
No, you're allowed to call it the World Wide Web.
I think it's on the intellect.
So, yeah,
it's interweb, isn't it? The Chinese for World Wide Web actually translates as... fucking chicken fried rice. actually translates as 10,000 dimensional web in heaven and earth.
I like that much better than World Wide Web, or what the New Zealanders call it, which is dab, dab, dab.
Although your man in Beijing's probably going to write in now and tell me that's bollocks. It's like my favourite Chinese fact.
As much as I like him, to be fair, he's not my man. So anyway,
yeah, you were.
I was reading on the internet, and I noticed something very bizarre. A headline that said KDE to be ported to Windows. Now I understand about Qt GPLing the Windows version of their tool.
This is dual license thing.
Trolltech GPLing the Windows.
What did I say?
You said Qt GPLing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, GPL and Trolltech.
Trolltech are now free for everyone to use.
So there you go, right?
Set up your own Trolltech.
I understand that bit, but why on earth would you port KDE to Windows? Bearing in mind, Windows has a shell of its own, like a desktop environment of its own.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Bizarrely enough, they've gone graphical now.
Wow.
And the other thing is...
Start X?
KDE doesn't offer anything that I can see that the Windows environment doesn't already offer. And it's not like the KDE core apps are that compelling that you'd really think, right, I've got my lovely Windows license.
What KDE
I'm apps? Now going to put KDE on it so I can use Conqueror and and K something else and K Pizza.
K Contact.
K Webstat.
And you know, I just want a desktop that's got KKK on it.
I think that's for an entirely different reason.
Because they all live in Alabama.
Matt, got big burning crosses on the desktop.
Matt, you need to go to clan.lugradio.
That's so clan. Anyway,
why
are they doing that?
Why is like porting the Atari ST interface, the Amiga. Why?
Shall I tell you why? Right?
Yes, please.
It's almost exactly the same as the answer to another question which has dogged the minds of humanity since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Which is, why do dogs lick their own balls? And the answer is, because they can. That's why they're porting KDE to Windows.
Now
the QT is there, someone has thought, that means we could run KDE on Windows, and has not stepped back to think, why in fuck's name would this be a good idea?
No, it's like having a conservatory for your conservatory. It's just stupid.
That's called an orangery, isn't it?
Doesn't it?
But you can already run GTK applications on Windows, because I run the GIMP.
Yeah, me too, mate. Yeah, I've got GTK on Windows, which makes sense.
You are a GIMP.
No.
That makes sense, though, because it cuts down on development time for porting open source stuff to Windows.
I understand the point in being able to run applications.
Exactly, yeah.
But I don't really see the point in being able to run KDE, the desktop environment, on Windows. No, I don't see the point of it. Jono, you know about KDE. You love the Windows. Tell us why this is a good idea.
I knew about KDE a few years back. It's all right. No, I don't see the point in it either, to be honest. In the same way, I don't see the point in porting GNOME over to it.
No, exactly.
Which no one is doing.
Exactly. But then again, doesn't really run very well on
So in the next version of LugRadio, are we going to talk about GNOME being ported?
I used
one at a time.
I used the GIMP all the time on Windows, because I don't want to fork out for Photoshop or PaintShop Pro.
I just heard what he said. You're a bastard, you know that, Paul. No, I mean, well, GTK is not so much it kind of seems a hack, doesn't it? I mean, that Tor Lindquist, or whatever his name is.
Tor Lindquist.
Yeah, him.
Isn't that where they held the Winter Olympics about 10 years?
So anyway, we all agreed it's a waste of time. What a load of bollocks.
Aid's got an agenda. Okay. Go on, Aid.
No, that's it, I'm just saying it's a waste of time.
Yeah, but by coincidence, Aid's going to bring up a subject. Go on, Aid.
Go on then, Balban.
Go on.
Right.
Bring one up.
In that case, what we should talk about is the many, many things to do with Firefox that have happened in the last couple of weeks.
Ooh, now this is interesting, yeah.
Oh, so now you want to talk.
Now you want to talk.
Oh, you've turned up then.
That was pretty mean.
I was getting my hair cut last week.
Washing your hair, were you?
I thought you were shitting through the eye of a needle last week.
And getting your hair cut at the same time, that's possible.
Right,
what about Firefox?
Things to do with Firefox. Thing number one to do with Firefox is the Firefox hole.
Yeah, there's absolutely... Have you tried it in the browser?
It's quite a serious issue.
It's very disturbing.
What is the Firefox hole?
Essentially, Firefox will handle domain names with non-ASCII characters in them.
Which I didn't even realise was possible, by the way.
Well, yeah, it's the IDN, International Domain Name idea. People came up with this and said,
you could do Arabic domain names.
It's a fucking crying shame that you can't have domain names. Under the covers, they are still ASCII. It's like, you know, how you can get Unicode and make
it's like special characters in the URL, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Or you can take binary data and Base64 encode it. Essentially, what you're doing is something like Base64ing a Unicode domain name into an ASCII domain.
Right.
But Firefox knows, and practically every browser apart from Internet Explorer, knows how to display these international domain names. So what you do is you look through the massive Unicode character set for a character that looks quite a lot like an A, and then you register the domain name P, character that looks like an A, YPAL.com, and then everyone goes to it, and it looks like PayPal.com in the browser.
And the thing is, it's spoofed the URL.
And then owned. It's not spoofed URL, it's perfectly legitimate URL, it just looks like PayPal.
That's true, but yeah. Yeah.
So there's absolutely nothing you can do to fix that, is there?
Shut down the site.
You can...
Well,
yeah,
that's kind of reactive.
It is reactive, totally.
Well, the domain name registrars could always stop people registering sites.
So really?
They're never going to do that.
No, I know they're not going to do it, but they fucking well ought to.
The browsers are suffering from supporting this new technology, and only because Internet Explorer doesn't support the new technology is it safe.
That's right.
Oh, that's so shit.
It's an inherent flaw with people not thinking in a Unicode world.
Mm. Our security officer today said, I tested it. It's all right in IE, though. The reason
the Firefox people haven't fixed it yet is not because they don't know how... Oh, sorry, it is because they don't know how to. Mm. But what they're trying to work out is the best way of delivering the fix. In the same way that when everyone realised there was a problem with phishing, you know, they thought IE just went, fine, we're going to block usernames and passwords and URLs.
Yes.
Which took away a load of really useful functionality.
And fucked quite a few other things up.
Yeah. And the Firefox people sat there and thought about it for a bit and came up with a good solution, which says, we'll pop up a little window that says you're trying to log into this site with this name. Yeah. Do you want to allow that?
It's pretty obvious, really.
If you step back and take 10 seconds to think about it, you can come up with a much better solution which doesn't deny people functionality. And that's what they're trying to do at the moment, I think.
So what else has happened with Firefox?
What about this GBrowser thing? Because Google have registered GBrowser, haven't they?
What's the big fuss about it? Who cares?
if Google come out with their own Google branded web browser, it'll be Firefox.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean
that's cool.
No, that is cool. But so what? I mean, it's great for open source.
Is Netscape cool? Is this cool? You know, I don't see
the big fascination. I mean, yeah, it's great for Firefox. It's great for open source, but. Who cares?
Is it great for Firefox? Is it great for open source? I mean, if they pummel loads of money into it, then it is great, but...
As long as they make it open source, it's great.
To be honest with you, it's great for Firefox because it means people can carry on using Firefox, and other sites will feel obliged to support them because they won't want to not support the Google browser.
Yeah.
Which means the National Lottery site will work
exactly.
in Firefox.
It's really going to raise the profile of Firefox even higher, isn't it?
In the same way that everyone thought that AOL making... AOL version 9 or whatever, be Firefox, be a Gecko browser, would have helped.
No, it stuck with Internet Explorer.
They were talking about doing so, and they bought it, and they bought Netscape, for God's sake, and then threw the bloody browser away.
You see, what I can see happening, though, which is another thing that's been mentioned in the news, is that we just end up with spyware on Firefox. Raise a profile, and you end up with...
There was a story I read today about this, and someone saying that spyware is going to happen for Firefox, and probably to a degree some of it will, but I don't believe that it can happen to the extent that it happens with Windows because
hang on.
With IE, sorry.
Yeah, well, bear in mind that we are a Linux radio show, less worried about that stuff anyway.
Yeah, I mean, but the point...
At the moment we are, but the point...
It harks back to AIDS argument about viruses, you know. I mean, we're not protecting ourselves against viruses, really. So are we going to get knocked down by a virus? Are we going to get knocked down by spyware? But doesn't a lot of spyware deal with dodgy ActiveX controls and hooks back into Windows,
That's the way it does the installation. They exploit holes in IE.
Yeah.
But they could just as easily exploit... holes in Firefox, if there are holes. People aren't targeting it at the moment.
Up until now, the vulnerabilities in Firefox have been not really that serious, apart from this one, which is quite serious.
I'm not sure I'd agree with you. There have been some vulnerabilities in Firefox which are potentially as serious as any vulnerability on IE. You know, they have an arbitrary local code execution, for example.
Yes.
Holes.
Yeah.
And that's about as serious you can get, really. Mm.
They're serious, but they just don't get the press attention. Because obviously, when a serious security issue happens with IE, then most people on the internet are going to be affected by it. Whereas a relatively small proportion of the internet are affected by Firefox issues, so therefore they get less press attention. They're going to get more press attention because Firefox is shooting in rapid speed towards, you know...
With an open source browser, though, I mean, if it isn't patched already, you know, really quickly, they generally patch it very quickly anyway, and if it isn't, you know, you've got the source, you can patch it.
But you've also got the built-in update thing in Firefox, which will indicate when there's security problems, which is absolutely ideal.
Yeah.
Love
so
that.
The big problem with that I see, though, is that people just don't know what it is. They see this little green thing in Firefox and think, what the hell's that?
Does that fit in as well with the Debian or Ubuntu or Fedora packaging?
They just update it from the archive. You basically ignore it. And they update it from the archive.
Right, okay.
Which kind of...
Actually, the Ubuntu people were thinking about patching Firefox itself so that when you clicked on the Firefox Update Me button, it goes away to the Ubuntu security archive and gets the new version of Firefox from Ubuntu rather than going and getting the version from Firefox.com, which I think is a fucking brilliant idea myself.
It is. 50-50 on it.
Can I say something about Firefox?
Couldn't do that.
Please do.
Thank you. Something I was...
You prefer IE?
No, something I was thinking about the other day, and I wrote this down on my O'Reilly blog.
Britney Spears?
No, it wasn't. Unfortunately, not. Is obviously Firefox is rapidly growing, and its growth curve is probably pretty steep because everybody's talking about Firefox and everybody seems to be downloading it, and we can't get accurate figures for downloads because people might download it and not use it, or people might download it and give it to their friends
or download it elsewhere.
Yeah, so we don't really know. But I was talking to a friend of mine who's a web developer who writes web applications that are directed for IE, and he's not really that concerned about Firefox. The purpose of my article was to say that there's a certain amount of time that's needed to port an IE-specific Firefox, an IE-specific web application to either cross-platform or another browser such as Firefox. My concern is that time we're getting to a point now where Firefox growth might outstrip that time, so people just won't have time to keep up, and then their clients are going to be banging on the door saying, hang on, sort Firefox out. And my question is to you guys, do you think this is going to happen? Do you think people are going to get squeezed on this?
Yes.
I mean, can it not be a good thing, though, for Firefox?
Oh, it's good for Firefox.
It's good because it'll show up crappy, lazy developers like your mate.
That's exactly...
Oh, it's good. I mean...
Exactly what it will do is, it, in my opinion at least, it's good for the web development community because people who have a clue are already developing applications which work in not only Internet Explorer and Firefox, but Safari as well, so Macintosh users can use it. And people who aren't doing that and are just coding for IE, fuck their noise. There should be less of them.
I think the problem with it, though, is that people... For people such as ourselves that read a lot about technology and we're interested in it and we're technology enthusiasts, obviously there's people who consider web development as a job to support their family. Now, they might not necessarily look at the 1,001 emerging web technologies, and let's face it, a lot of web technologies are bullshit.
Firefox
it's their manager's job.
Firefox is far too big a thing, though. And also, to me, if you do a job, then you do it to the best of your ability, and if you're HTML coder, a JavaScript coder, whatever, then part of that is to do standards compliance. And if you're not doing it, then you miss out, then that's your problem, mate.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I mean, as we've said before, I mean, some people don't care about standards compliance. I mean,
and their day of reckoning is coming.
Yeah. The thing is, I mean, if you're creating public-facing websites, you should give a shit about standards compliance.
Exactly.
I'm encouraged because I've dealt with a couple of companies recently, and both of them have come along, and they've demonstrated the web front end, and they've demonstrated it in Firefox. And when I've said to them, this works in Firefox, they've actually said, actually, it works better in Firefox.
Yeah. Right.
And that was Qualys. Have you heard of Qualys?
No. Yeah.
Okay. They demonstrated it in. Cool. And they're the people who actually said it actually works better in Firefox than it works in IE. And the other company were VMware, and they were demonstrating a web application, and they were demonstrating it in Firefox. And I thought, brilliant. And brilliant. This shows that you can do it.
VMware uses GTK2.
It does now. The Linux
fits into GNOME. Nice. Yep. So, incidentally.
Not many things fit into a GNOME.
No comment.
Speaks from experience. So, incidentally, speaking of GNOME. we're going to get a KDE guy on, aren't we?
We are.
We'll talk about that some other time. So, yeah. Nice
and,
one.
And if you, yeah.
What about an XFCE guy?
No. Fuck a bunch, really. XFCE.
Oh, you're so blinkered.
That's right.
What about a TOS guy?
Huh? Terms of service?
No, the Tremel operating system from the from
Oh, shut up.
Let's get a gem man in.
Gem? Cool. Are there any gem people still left alive?
Surely, I'm sure I've seen gem running on Open DOS or something like that, or Free DOS.
That's quality. Do that.
Okay, so it is the end of the show. So as
end of the show
already. I know.
What an interesting.
Right,
what it's
and
been
thank you
like.
Much. Good night. No, don't do a big closing,
ladies and gentlemen.
What do we do at the end of the show?
We read the email.
We read the email,
read
man.
The email.
Oh yes,
email.
I have email.
Long yep. Radio email.
All right. Who wants Hello. To start?
I'll go first.
I'll go first, Aid.
I always like to go first.
Yes, you do.
And finish last.
No, that's right.
You always wish you finished last.
And you finish bountifully.
First in, last out.
The reason I want to go first is because Tom's emailed us.
Oh my
I missed
God.
That. What was that?
First in, last out. It's a principle of stacks in of data. Anyway.
I don't think you meant that. Just ignore the mail.
No, he did mean that. That's a stack.
He did, yeah.
No, I...
But we love that.
But we know
the humble. Come on, email.
I've lost my stride now.
Go on,
lost your stride?
Okay. Shut it. Right then. Okay, so Tom's emailed us in response.
Tommy. Who's Tom?
Yeah, who's
no,
Tom?
No, just some guy called Tom.
Tom
so look, Tom, right?
Thank you very much, Tom.
Okay. Hi, Tom.
So this is in response to a comment that I made on last show about Brazilians.
I hate bags.
Two words. One of them's off.
Sorry.
No, this about you slagging off the Brazilians.
This was me slagging off the Brazilians. I didn't actually slag them off. All I said was that they were the country who clicked on the most banner ads.
Yeah.
Which they are.
Spam.
Yeah. Okay, so this is his response, and it's quite an interesting
82-point text. Fuck off, bald man.
Would you like to buy some Viagra?
Cialis or whatever it is.
No, go on.
Okay, so he says, right, hi there. I guess most people would start off by saying how much I enjoy the show and continue by bragging how long I've been listening, blah, 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 blah. The main reason I'm writing to you is to comment on the rampant online spam clicking of Brazilians. The reason I got... the impression I got from spending a lot of time there is that Brazil is a developing nation and it's desperately trying to adapt itself to the information age.
So they need Viagra.
They're trying to... they're almost trying to skip the industrial age, the sweatshops, exploitation, etc., etc. And therefore, they're throwing a large, fairly uneducated population into the deep end of the interweb pool.
Does it actually say interweb?
It actually does say the interweb pool. We love that, Tom.
I've got off
absolutely
you, Tom,
love
and
that.
All the Brazilian people who obviously need cable de-scramblers in order to get into the new information age.
Excellent. So, yeah, he goes on to say that most Brazilian interweb newbies are blissfully unaware of all the problems that they're facing, and one of these is spam and privacy, etc., etc. It's quite a big email, so we haven't got time to read it all out. But, yeah, then... That's very interesting, I thought.
So basically, don't blame Brazil.
Don't blame Brazil.
And in fact, not only don't blame them, but, you know, we should be supporting them. This is a time where we can say, let's get some Linux in there. You know,
exactly.
let's give them an email client other than Outlook.
Tommy just, Boy just, mentions Connectiva.
He does mention Connectiva. I'd say it was quite a long email. Yeah.
And this is where Nicholas Negroponte's proposed sub-$100 laptop comes in. Which
very
is be
interesting.
Which is
I would
be
love
money.
To see
yeah.
that. Is that going to be like the hardware Ubuntu, do you think?
I don't know, it could be.
It seems really interesting.
I mean, he seems to be pushing it towards, like, you know, he's aiming to push it to the third world.
Yeah.
Rather than but a lot of people here are saying, would it be brilliant if we could give every kid in school a laptop for $68 or whatever, or 68 quid or whatever $100 is?
Talking about not blaming Brazil, do you realise we've all got to start blaming Poland again?
Yeah.
Stop thanking Poland.
Why, what
start
did they do?
Blaming them again.
I missed
well,
this.
You know
the patents thing?
You know about the thankpoland.info thing where Poland held up the... held up the passage of the European patent law. Yeah, well, Poland have now said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, after pressure from the other member states.
So we're back to where we were.
So I don't think we should be not thanking Poland.
Yeah,
we should.
We want
with
flowers back.
Ourselves.
Want with flowers back.
Our own governments. We should be going down...
We should be, yes.
Bloody in the ear of big business. I don't understand a bloody thing our leaders...
No, I agree with you, but...
On anything, not just computers, but anything.
I feel nothing but helpless. Oh,
hey,
oh
my...
Some of it fell on the floor. It's the tip jar.
Our jar is so full, some of it fell out the edge.
That's not true, ladies and gentlemen. We need to do your tips still.
Actually, there is a donation missing out of the tip jar, well, Matt. Would you like to explain?
The reason that sounded bad is because one of those coins that fell into the tip jar fell there a good 12 months ago.
Basically... Ross and Jen were our first
We're very guilty. I'm sure we mentioned it on air.
We certainly thanked them personally.
Matt, see, stole the money.
Matt just buggered off with it.
I renewed lugradio.org with it, all right?
Thank you very much.
I renewed lugradio.org
with it. Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
My God. So thank you very much, Russ and Jen,
first of all. We appreciate it.
And we have a new donation.
Thank you very much especially.
Yeah, let's give them a
round. They were the first.
Go,
Russ and Jen.
Go, yeah, motherfucker.
Official marriage couple of Lug Radio.
We have another donation. Another donation.
Whee!
Yes. And we love the donations. Ooh. This is from Robert Postel. He just donated. From what I can gather, he didn't send us an email.
Nope.
So, Robert, whoever you are, we appreciate it.
Wherever you are.
We raise a hat to you. We salute you wherever.
Can we actually get
whichever country you're
four
in.
Microphone stands instead of these two?
Yes. That's next on the shop.
Can we do that?
I think we've
got enough money now to buy them, so yep, that's cool.
I think we'll be buying two more microphone stands.
Oh, this is going to be brilliant.
Yep. Thank you very much. And we'll pay for Johnny's phone bill as well.
Thank you. Because we like to speak to
not
people
the whole
like,
lot,
like Miguel and Jeff and Mark and all these fantastic people
and Schwab.
Yeah. And Schwab. And right. That's it.
I'm Ross and Jen.
Gavin Henry. Okay. Next email. I've got one here from DP. Not sure what that stands for. You lot being too many of the wrong websites. You're all disgusting, and I'm not proud.
Double penetration.
I'm not proud that I know you at all. Anyway, he says, "Greeting from Canada's snowy capital, but doesn't say where it is."
What is that? Moose jaw.
I know two things about Canada. Well, number one is Terence and Philip, which actually is two things on its own. Yeah. And the other thing is maple leaves, and that's all I know about Canada.
Yeah. Well, now you know there's a town they call Moose Bugger.
Is it Vancouver?
Moose Bugger.
If it's the capital of Canada, which happens to be snowy, as opposed to like the place with the most snow in Canada, then it is
Toronto or Vancouver, isn't it?
No, it's Ottawa? Neither of those. It's Ottawa.
Isn't it Boston?
They were Ottawa. A band
it's
in the 80s.
It's the same over there, isn't it?
Yeah. Isn't Canada the 51st state?
Oh.
That annoys Kate. No,
it is anyway, pretty amazing how
sorry,
far.
Sorry, DP. Yeah.
Canada's another... We should get a map. A map and put points
with
in.
Our tips.
Yeah, nice visual.
We should get a map and put it on the walls so we all know where these places are.
So, Moose
okay,
Jaw,
anyway, this guy from Moose Buggerer, DP.
Moose Buggerer?
says, enjoyed your show 20 where someone was saying... I was saying, in fact, there was no way to deal with weblog comment spam other than turning off links, moderating the comments, or turning off comments. Quite right, that was me.
Who was that again?
Why not apply the same filtering to comments coming in as Thunderbird applies to mail coming in, i.e. junk comment filtering? And the answer is because it doesn't work very well every time someone's tried to do Bayesian spam filtering on weblog comments.
Have they tried it?
Yep.
Really?
More than once.
Okay.
It's not a bad idea, but what you need to do is collaborate, because people get a lot of email than they get weblog comments, unless you're Jason Cockey or Will Wheaton or someone like that.
Will Wheaton.
Just a geek.
He's got a blog, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, that was the point. He gets lots of comments.
The key thing here
is that in order to do it, you have to kind of band together with lots of other people. And no one can really come up with a scheme for doing that kind of thing. Because if you do that, then Dave Weiner tries to make it his own and Movable Type try and make it their own.
And Dave Weiner moans if you don't credit him as the godfather of it or something.
Yeah, it's scripting.com, isn't it?
And yeah.
Yeah.
And... It just, I mean, there are...
Is there no
there
love for Dave Weiner, by the way?
Not for me, but...
Not appropriate like surname is all
there, there are. There are. Someone said there should be a Weiner number. We had the Weiner number of one if Dave Weiner had ever complained about you. We had the Weiner number of two if someone who Dave Weiner complained about you. Or something like that. Not the Erdos number in maths. Anyway, yeah, so there's a lot more talk about how distributed stuff could happen than it actually happening.
Cool. Next nice email.
Moving on. Oh, sorry, no, just briefly, he says, nice to a Linux radio show with good quality sound, so thank you to Jono for that.
Thank you.
And that leads neatly on to...
Thank you to Cubase, you mean.
Oh, God. It leads neatly onto another email.
amazingly enough. This is from APOC, which is an interesting name.
What, out of The Matrix?
Yeah, I was going to say he's out of The Matrix, isn't he?
I thought it was some Black Country comedy duo, Eli and I knock or something.
He says, hey guys, first off, great stuff. I've been listening since just after episode 3 in season 1.
That's episode 3.
Episode 1.
Ages. Wow. Cool.
And it's been following ever since. Even managing to get a few others listening to the show, and they all love it too.
Fantastic. Spread the vibe.
Nice one.
Sorry about not donating money. Just don't send us your apologies, bastard. Send us your money.
No,
are you joking?
Just to be clear, you don't have to apologise if you haven't sent us money. No, it's fine. I'm worried we might have pimped the give us money thing a bit hard recently.
Feel free to download every episode.
For free.
Don't send us anything.
That's our licence. You can have it. You can listen to it. We don't want money. We don't want medals.
Can you even translate it into French, Bernardo?
Yes.
Well, we do want money, but we don't need money.
he says to me...
If Mark Shuttleworth wants to give us some money.
Yeah.
We're all about the Ubuntu. We're all about the Ubuntu sponsorship.
Well, this guy says, but you've all got jobs and I don't, so screw that. Okay.
Fair comment.
He says, going back to what Mr. No Bacon said, thank you, at the end of episode 20... about just wanting to play music and not care about computers or something to that effect. I totally agree. I'm a musician and having to prat around with a system when I'm trying to write and record is highly frustrating.
I think the difference is he's a musician.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
That was a bit harsh.
Harshness.
That's
can
a bit
I do
harsh.
My email?
Yep. Go ahead. Right. By the way, he just says one final thing, which I like. He says a few other bits, and then he says, keep up the great work, dudes. Rock on.
Hey. Oh,
thank you very much, Apo.
Thank you, Apo.
Right, I've got an email from Norway, from Rumnahamas land.
Norway?
Yeah, from Norway.
Is that another first?
He's one of our one of our new mirrors, actually. So
yeah, it's first email out of
thanks
Norway.
Thanks to all of our mirrors.
Oh, is that from Runrig or whatever his name is?
Rumnahamas land. By the way, Rune, I'd just like to say, hello, can I first snack me Rune? Which is Norwegian for...
You are such a
do you practice this before you come over?
Which is Norwegian for, hello, can I speak
you
to
you? You must practice this before you come over.
No, I don't.
He goes away and he learns things to look clever.
I used to have a Norwegian pen pal and taught myself how to ask for him on the phone, and it goes, hello, can you for snakke me runa?
You do realise that everyone in Norway is cracking up now because it actually means my aunt is handcuffed to the bed or something.
Was really weird was every time I rang him, he just get this old woman. Anyway, Runa says, you got my attention through Jeff's blog and I must say I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Is that Jeff?
Whoa!
And
thanks a lot, Jeff, as well, for mentioning that.
We had an opportunity to do it again.
No, and you all missed it.
The interview with Jeff was nice and informative.
Jeff who? Sorry?
Jeff, whoa!
Good God!
What is he good for?
Absolutely
nothing!
Say it again, boy.
Jeff, whoa!
So, the interview with that person was nice and informative, and he liked to hear that you so easily were able to learn Python, D-Bartel, and etc. He says, kind of a Mr. Motivator. This is your male correspondent.
Jono looks the least bloke like Mr. Motivator I've ever seen.
Your male correspondence with the UK National Lottery and the general ranting were both entertaining and funny, and he was laughing quite a bit. So keep up the good works. He'll tune in another time. So
excellent. By the way, before I read this email, No off the forums was saying that he was actually saying he was in tears when he heard the
that's really sad.
When he heard that, when he heard the lottery thing. No, with laughter, I assume. I have another email. Again, I seem to have got the music ones. This isn't directed to me, it's directed
you
to...
You printed them out.
Well, yeah, but you just forced me into it. This is from Roy Plushkl. He says, heard you were looking for a Linux audio app during your last show. I've been using Ardor. That's what I meant when I said Arioli.
And we thought it was called Oriole.
Which isn't a nipple.
Yeah, so...
Oriole is a nipple.
Oh, God, I'm getting so confused.
Anyway.
Nipple. It's www... sorry.
Nipple.com.
Nipple.sourceforge.net.
/ get involved.
He said he had early
www.ardour.org. ARDOUR, incidentally.
He said I had issues
with passion.
So, can you shut up? He said, I had issues. I had issues with early versions and blah, blah, blah. Make sure you have Jack running properly. I realise you've probably tried this, but it wasn't mentioned. Unless you mixed up Aurora, insert juvenile nipple joke, and harder. Thank you very much.
So not only was he right about the juvenile nipple joke, but he got another one in this episode. That's two for the price of one. Thank you very much, Roy Plushka.
So anyway,
yeah, isn't it?
If you want to get your crappy email on Lug Radio, email show@lugradio.org.
That's show@lugradio.org.
Oh, wow.
And you can get along to the forums at forums.lugradio.org.
Don't forget clan at clan.lugradio.
Yeah, if you want to play some computer games. We might set up some kind of voice over IP mailbox, maybe like a SIP mailbox, something.
We should do that.
Yeah, we should do that.
We should.
Matt's been poncing about with voice over IP, and I ponced about with it following his instructions, and it all seems pretty cool.
And Gossip Tell allow you to, they email you your voicemail.
They do.
Are they paying
you? Cool, actually.
No, they're not. They're not that great.
We should do a VoIP special.
Yeah, we should do.
Well, we should do something
about
it.
Let's not do a special.
Why don't we hear about Skype?
Why don't we all just like sit at home and VoIP into the show for one show?
They did that on .NET Rocks. I listened to one of them, and Rory was at home ill, but he was connected by Skype.
The Linux Things Tech Show guys do all the time.
Or something.
Why don't we?
Yeah, but it'd be nice.
Hi to the Linux Things Tech Show guys, by the way. Hello.
Yes, hello.
I just waved
to the LinuxLink.net for another show like this. Don't go to any other Linux shows out there, though, because
there are only
the Linux Link Tech Show and us. So good.
Pub quiz.
Yes, we've got three teams now.
Yay!
We have the Linux Link Tech Show guys. Thanks a lot. Cumbria Lug.
Yep.
Who are putting forward some on conference calling. They're going to, and also I think Wolves Lug are going to put forward one because Kat and Dave got in touch today to say that they'd like to put together.
Are they going
to
be Wolf Slug or SB Lug then?
Well, I don't know if they're going to be Wolf Slug or Clocksoft, but I think they're going to be Wolf Slug.
I might see if I can get Open Advantage to put a team on.
Nice one. I've also emailed quite a few other
people. Have you got enough guys?
But don't forget that
an organ.
If you want to join in the Lug Radio Pub Quiz, get in touch. Email us show@lugradio.org.
Yeah, please do.
Get your team together. It's not going to be anything hard. Don't worry. It's going to be a few questions about stuff
marketing,
you know about already.
Usual stuff.
You'll get a trophy if you win.
And Lug Radio Live is still happening, we assure you.
Yeah.
We'll let you know more in the next episode.
We will do.
And maybe even have a date.
Maybe. June.
With John.
Yeah. That's right.
Second prize is two dates with John.
Someone posted on the message on the forums that they apparently like my sex appeal.
Really?
Darren. Apparently it was Darren.
Darren?
Darren. I think it was Ming-Wa.
Ming-Wa.
Ming-Wa balls.
It's been fun. Thanks again, Miguel.
Yeah, and, thanks everyone.
Yeah, take care, guys. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Goodbye.
Hola.